Welcome back, folks. It's Thursday, May 9th, 2024. Born on the state in 1940, the late Wiregrass outdoorsman and TV personality Red Holland, who spent much of his career in Mobile. Now, today it's nasty weather, the lawmaker's last day, a great white sighting, and a whole lot of tree hugging, literally. We do have a special treat today. AL.com's Greg Garrison is on the show, and we're going to do something they tell you to be careful about doing. We're going to talk about religion. There's been a lot happen on the faith beat lately. Greg will tie in some history for us. My name's Ike Morgan, and we're down in Alabama. It was anything but quiet last night in parts of North Alabama, where some nasty weather came through yesterday evening into the overnight hours, and storms continue to work their way into the state. Last night, the Huntsville area had several tornado-warned storms move through. Emergency officials were saying that the town of Henniger sustained major damage. News of the aftermath was still unfolding as of this recording, and much more will be known as survey crews inspect the damage during the light of day. Also, be aware that in much of the state, there's also a chance for storms today and then again later tonight. For breaking news and the latest weather, check out AL.com and AL.com/weather. Today is day 30 of the Alabama legislative session, making it by law the final day to make the magic happen on Goat Hill. Legislators still have to pass an education budget, reports AL.com's Mike Kaysen. A conference committee has approved a new version of that budget, and it needs to be voted on in both chambers. Some efforts still up in the air include banning Glock switches, which convert semi-automatic firearms into machine guns, extending the ban on classroom discussion of sexual orientation or gender identity in public school through 12th grade, defining male and female based on biological sex. Now, this could apply to women and girls sports and more. Making school and public library staff criminally liable for distributing sexual or gender-oriented material to minors without parental consent. And allowing virtual participation in parole hearings by inmates, law enforcement, victims, and others. Also, the lottery casinos package is still out there. Certainly a long shot at best. It's been within a single vote in the Senate of getting onto the ballot as a constitutional amendment for the first time in over 20 years. Receiving final legislative approval on Wednesday was a bill creating a group to establish a regional agricultural center in Warrior, a bill making it easier for police to seize street racing vehicles, and a bill increasing penalties for making some false reports to law enforcement. Remember the Carly Russell Oaks? The bill that would have replaced the current state ethics law died in Senate committee. A video from researchers at the University of South Alabama is the first documented great white shark sighting along the Alabama coast, reports AL.com's Warren Kulo. The researchers spotted the shark in about 150 feet of water near the state's artificial reef zone back in mid-April, then saw it again 10 days later. Now, while it's the first documented sighting along our coast, remember that one was caught from the beach in Orange Beach just a little over a year ago. They named this shark Miss Paula, P-A-W-L-A, after one of the South Alabama Jaguars mascots. They said she's an 8-foot juvenile, estimated to be around 15 years old. Great whites mature at around 30 years old, much like modern man. Sean Powers is the director of South Alabama's Stokes School of Marine and Environmental Studies. He said that in a decade of surveying reefs, artificial and natural, this is a first. Now, on an unrelated note, Memorial Day is May 27th, and that weekend marks the unofficial beginning of summer beach vacation season, so come on down, tourists. 1,123. That's how many trees were hugged by Auburn University graduate student Abu Bakar Tahiru in 60 minutes to establish a Guinness World Record. He did all of his tree hugging for this in the Tuskegee National Forest. Now, Tahiru, who's from Ghana, is working on a master's degree in forestry. He said the act was a call for environmental sustainability and to demonstrate his love for nature. So if y'all walk up on somebody in the woods who's hugging a bunch of trees, it might mean that he has started a trend. Y'all remember to always get consent from the trees and watch for poison ivy. Folks, we're going to take a quick ad break so we can give the doorman a raise. When we come back, we're going to talk with AL.com reporter Greg Garrison, a longtime religion reporter and certainly an authority on religion and faith issues in Alabama. We'll talk about the Methodist split, the UMC conference, some attendance trends, and even a little Alabama history. You don't want to miss it. Back in a minute. Well, thanks for coming back, everybody. We've seen the Methodist Church go through several months of division as churches nationally and especially in Alabama have left the United Methodist Church over possible looming changes in the church's view of gay marriage and gay clergy. The remaining UMC leaders met last month in Charlotte, North Carolina, for the United Methodist General Conference. I thought it would be a great time to have Greg Garrison visit with us. He's covered faith in Alabama for many years and has been providing the reporting on these stories and more. Thanks for coming on, Greg, and welcome.
Yeah, great to be here.
Tell us some about the impact of that conference. I mean, did you expect to see the UMC move on these changes this quickly?
Yes, everybody saw this coming. This has been in a process since the 70s and 80s. I started covering the United Methodist Church in 1985 and went to the first general conference I ever attended in 1988. They have that every 4 years, and that's the governing body that makes these decisions. And they've thought about this at every single general conference that I have followed. So what happened in the past couple of years is, right before the pandemic, they had a conference in which the conservatives won. They kept all the prohibitions on gay clergy, on same-sex marriage, and so forth. And they put in a clause that anybody who's worried about the direction of the denomination on these issues can leave and negotiate to take your property with you. So more than half of all the United Methodist churches in Alabama did that, negotiated to take their property, left. These were the most conservative Methodist churches in the state. After they left, and this happened nationwide, it became obvious that the progressives in the denomination were going to have the votes to basically control this whole general conference that just ended this past Friday on May the 3rd in Charlotte.
Yeah, and even though this window has closed, making it less expensive to leave, you reported that at a meeting of some of the global Methodists, that's a group that's reformed, with the UMC churches leaving. At least one speaker said he expects to see more churches leaving. And at the conference, some voices were maybe more eager than others to see people leave. Is there a feeling out there that there could be more church defections?
Yeah, I think everybody expects that some more will leave. One thing that happened is a lot of people have so much invested in the United Methodist Church. They grew up in the church. They were married in the church, so on and so forth, ordained in the church. They wanted to give the denomination every benefit of the doubt on that it was going to keep these traditional stances that they embraced. So a lot of traditionalists did stay in the denomination and wanted to wait for the outcome of this general conference. Now that they've seen it, a lot of people may still leave at this point. It'll be harder for whole churches to leave and take their property with them. But what you may see is a lot of individuals in churches leave and go find maybe a global Methodist or some other type of Methodist church to join. So I think it is fair to say that there will probably be more departures, and we'll just have to wait and see where this all shakes out on how many people ultimately leave the United Methodist Church.
That's interesting what you say about individual congregants who might leave. I mean, right. I don't want to speculate too much, but I mean, obviously the more conservative, because the vote wasn't unanimous on some of the gay marriage change and that sort of thing. So there are those who are against some things that could go. But what about, are there chances we could see people joining the Methodist Church, I guess, the, both the UMC and the Global, who may be Methodist at heart, but this issue they've been waiting to see how it's resolved one way or the other.
Yeah, the United Methodist Church right now is in a position where they're trying to start over in so many of the places where they have lost churches. So you'll have small towns like Oneonta, Albertville, Gunnersville, places like that, where the United Methodist Church left. And so right now they're tasked with finding a group to start a new United Methodist Church. So we'll see what happens with that. I don't see a lot of people joining the United Methodist Church. It was mainly about, should I stay or should I go? I don't think there are a lot of people out there who were in other denominations saying, hey, if the United Methodists do this, I'll become a Methodist. There were already denominations, including the Episcopalians, the Presbyterian Church USA, that have a stance that allows same-sex marriage, ordination of gay clergy. So it's not like the United Methodists are the only denomination out there that take this stance. They were actually one of the later mainline denominations to take that stance.
Oh, yeah, that makes sense. You reported for another recent story that the Southern Baptist denomination has lost membership for like 17 years in a row. It's still the largest Protestant denomination. But is there a sense of rising urgency, you think, about turning those numbers around?
Well, there always has been. I think the United Methodists and the Southern Baptists are a great side-by-side comparison for a lot of reasons. They both started the same way in the South. The First Methodist Church and the First Baptist Church both started in 1808 when circuit riding preachers started arriving in Alabama doing Brush Arbor revivals. That's how both the Baptists and Methodists got started and became the two biggest denominations in Alabama. In the 1800s, the Methodists were actually bigger. John Wesley had sent missionaries to evangelize the South, and they would ride around on horses from town to town. And the way the Methodists appoint clergy and move them around still reflects that origin a little bit. But the Baptists and Methodists both started at the same time, both organized in the same way with circuit riding preachers who went around starting churches, grew to be the two biggest denominations in the state and in the South. And what you saw with the Southern Baptist Convention is that they were growing aggressively past the Methodist Church. And it really wasn't until about 2006 that the Southern Baptist Convention began to see the same type of declines that the mainstream churches like the Presbyterians, Episcopalians, and Methodists had been experiencing starting in the 1960s. And that reflects more of a societal shift against organized religion and faith in organized religion.
Yeah, I don't guess the impact on our culture of these two denominations can be overstated, can it?
No, you can't look at the history of Alabama without looking at the history of the Methodist and Baptist churches, because the Baptist evangelist movement that started spreading churches across the state, and the Methodist circuit riders who started churches, they became the foundation of the state of Alabama from 1808, when the first Baptist and Methodist churches started, until Alabama became a state in 1819, and then on through to the Civil War. Methodists and Baptists basically built the state, and they were the dominant religious force in the culture, the dominant cultural force in the culture, and they became part of civilizing the frontier, because Methodist women and Baptist women wanted stable homes, and their men were off on the frontier drinking whiskey, and so they embraced the temperance movement and kind of pulled their men into the revivals, made them join churches, and tried to create a stable family atmosphere by embracing this evangelical culture. And in the 1870s, after the Civil War, the Methodist women were a key part of the temperance movement that eventually led to prohibition in 1920. You had all these Methodists who were pushing for total abolishment of alcohol. They viewed it as the thing that was the greatest pitfall to families on the frontier was their men drinking alcohol. And so evangelical culture, both Methodist and Baptist, basically became the foundation of Alabama culture. It was in every town in Alabama. You had Baptist church and Methodist church. They both exerted influences on the culture and power structure of every town, county, and in the state government throughout Alabama's history.
Yeah, and then Prohibition also gave us NASCAR and possibly sweet tea, right?
Yeah, that's right. You know, and now the Methodists have kind of gradually become less shy about saying, hey, I'm having a glass of wine. But for a long time, the Methodists were the teetotaler denomination. In fact, when I first came to Birmingham to be the religion writer for the Birmingham News, I got invited to the West End Temperance Union Club as a guest speaker at West End United Methodist Church. And it was nine little old ladies in their 90s. And they still were part of the temperance movement in the 1980s. And back then, Alabama was still mostly dry counties. Almost every county was a dry county. And of course, we've seen a total revolution in the opening up of beer and wine sales throughout the state of Alabama, to the point where we have breweries everywhere in Birmingham and Huntsville now.
Yeah, we remember the old state line liquors at every road in Florida.
Yeah, absolutely. Couldn't get beer at one time in Alabama. It was pretty hard.
In Alabama, I also, this is totally anecdotal, but the non-denominational churches, I would presume they lean conservative. And I mean, we have the Church of the Highlands, which is huge. That would seem to have sped up the decline in numbers at Baptist churches. Am I right with that?
Yeah. The Church of the Highlands is basically a Pentecostal church. Even a lot of people who go there don't realize that the founding pastor, Chris Hodges, grew up in a Pentecostal background. And they thrive on that kind of praise music-oriented, upbeat worship service with an independent basis that allows you to control the congregations a lot easier than with a church bureaucracy, a denominational bureaucracy. So independent churches have an advantage right now. They're a lot more flexible. The United Methodists ended up in the 1980s and 1990s with hundreds of church buildings in places where people had moved out of those neighborhoods. You had churches that were just left abandoned. And the denomination had a hard time shifting into areas that were growing, whereas an organization like the Church of the Highlands, which started in 2001, is basically run by one guy. They're becoming one of the largest denominations in the state simply because they have that ultimate flexibility to go and start up a congregation wherever they need to and totally control how that church is run. Which when you have a denominational bureaucracy like the United Methodists do, and to a lesser extent, the Southern Baptists do, because they claim to have independent church autonomy, but they still have a church bureaucracy above that. It becomes harder to control the direction of the whole denomination when you've got that bureaucracy. Church of the Highlands doesn't really have much bureaucracy. Let's go start a church here. They'll send a bunch of people to start a meeting in a school, and then they'll build a $15 million building in that neighborhood because that's a growing neighborhood. So we've seen independent churches like Church of the Highlands really ascend while the mainline denominations have declined. And the Southern Baptist is more evangelical than mainline, but they have also started to decline in a way similar to what the mainline denominations had experienced.
Yeah, I can see how that would really help with church building to not have a a government sort of structure behind you doing that sort of thing. Greg, this was great. I sure really appreciate you coming on and talking with us about some of these trends that we've seen.
Yeah, absolutely.
And everybody, thanks for listening to us. We're going to be back tomorrow and do another roundup of news. Until then, y'all come by and see what we're up to on the internet at al.com.